have like a specific like server infrastructure for your devices. Like all this stuff sort of is the industry, you know, got together on compatibility and interoperability, which is very good. And all these things kind of work together. And then Apple over the years, like really defined how to manage devices at scale. And again, I'm being very running through history quickly because obviously it took, you know, a lot of grit work to get to where we are today, moving from the VPP program and things like that. Apple Configurator came on the scenes. Like there, all these things happen, but like where we stand today is like Apple's really popular in the enterprise. The iPhone, the Mac, and the iPad are really first-class devices to manage. They're extremely dominant endpoints, and the industry really has grown up around Apple, and all these devices are fun and easy to manage. Is that a good way to sum up where we are today?
I was going to say no one I think I know would say that anything is fun or easy about managing software update in the year of our Beyonce 2024, but things are definitely better than they've ever been prior, and there's never been a better time to be a Mac admin than now. In terms of, hey, I have a full-featured control suite via Apple MDM. I have really good opportunities for directory integrations on the Mac as well as on our mobile devices, and the ability to rely on a single set of user credentials and, you know, a really cloud focused forward, you know, space today based on single sign-on, based on, you know, having a single identity for my business context. I mean, here at Jump Cloud, I've got, you know, 25 different apps that I don't have to worry about the credentials for because they're all tied directly to my Jump Cloud ID.
Well, and I think this is so critical, and this is where Apple, I think, really made a smart move. And I never thought I'd see it happen. And I remember when it happened, I thought there's no way. They have allowed, and I think it's been critical for you know, companies like Jump Cloud, you can now present a customized login window on macOS that is tied directly to identity service.
Did that,
I mean, to me, that might be one of the most important decisions in the enterprise for, I mean, again, it was scalable without that, but like that to me, supercharged scalability of macOS at work.
Well, If you look at the history, you know, I think that there are a lot of people, you know, who were tying into those authentication plugin systems. I mean, obviously, that's how the Active Directory plugin was written for the macOS native directory services. As they moved away from NetInfo to the local Kerberos-based authentication, it was really straightforward to write an login window. I'm sorry, that's a lie. It was possible to write an authentication plugin for the native operating system so that you could, handle credential management centrally. And so, you know, I was going to say Jump Cloud's been around a little more than a decade at this point. And, you know, when we got our start in like 2014, we were doing that through an authentication plugin and inserting ourselves with a native login window over top of what Apple was doing because it was an extensible operating system. And the idea was you could build a plugin for the authentication systems so that your business authentication could control the local authentication of the device. That has only gotten more interesting as time has gone by. And where we sit today, as we start, you know, I'm going to go back in time 2 years. I'm going to say as we start in 2022, the world of local accounts that are tied to, cloud credentials gets a lot more interesting with the introduction of Apple's platform SSO technology with macOS Ventura. And so we start to really see Apple starting to rethink a lot of the different pieces associated with identity and understanding that cloud-based identity is the future of identity, not just for, individual user accounts, but for corporate user accounts as well. I think that there is a real strength towards that approach within the enterprise today as we go through that process. And Platform SSO's development, as we've gone through 2022, 2023, 2024, seems to be the direction of the future. And the idea here is you have a local user account that can have the operating system natively sync your credential with an identity provider and force identity logins. What I think is more interesting is the development cycle that that's taken this year as we head into the fall, where macOS Sequoia will be released. And the new MDM controls for Platform SSO offer the ability to allow a little bit of a grace period between authentications so that you can try and keep things up to date with your ID tokens, which is the, you know, again, that OpenID Connect method of authenticating without necessarily exposing the password to the authentication channel. And it's really exciting to kind of see Apple really push on the future of that technology and push it forward. For the first time, we get the ability to access the network stack at the FileVault login window directly with Platform SSO. Obviously, this is a very difficult situation. It's a little bit fraught if you're not on the right network, since you can't change the network at the FileVault login screen. But if you're near a network, you know, and your organization has said, hey, look, all of your authentication actions at the login window have to be authenticated against the IDP for maximum security, you get some really great experiences. And you can define a short grace period so that if you aren't on the right network or near the right network when you're at the FileVault login screen, your previous password will get you in. And then the device can take the appropriate steps to, you know, reestablish network connectivity before kind of freezing up on you and basically throwing you out. So I'm really excited with the current state of Platform SSO, and especially, you know, I think that there are some really interesting, you know, trends that are going on there. Microsoft's approach here has been really kind of pushing people towards the secure enclave keys, which is a key pair that is generated inside the secure enclave, the securest part of your Mac, that aren't necessarily accessible to other parts of the operating system, so that you can essentially say, hey, look, I've got a private key in here that can sign requests on request to talk to that space, but nothing's ever coming out of the secure enclave. I mean, if you look at Apple's security bounty program, the top most expensive bounty that they will pay is for something that can exfiltrate data from the secure enclave. And, you know, that kind of future where we can rely on those most secure credentials is a really fascinating
one. This episode of Apple at Work is sponsored by Muzzle. Deploying, managing, and protecting Apple devices at work shouldn't be difficult or require several solutions. Muzzle is the only Apple unified platform for business. By combining enhanced device management, endpoint security, internet privacy and security, single sign-on, and enhanced app management into a single Apple-only platform, businesses can now easily and automatically deploy, manage, protect their Apple devices automatically with one solution at an affordable price. With a solution for every business size and the best support in the market, start a free 30-day trial and see firsthand why Muzzle is more than an Apple MDM. Muzzle is everything you need to work with Apple. To learn more, visit business.mozle.com. That's business.mozle.com. Thanks to Mozle for sponsoring Apple at Work this week.
So I've been thinking about this a lot. So again, so it's, we're in a really, really healthy place with everything identity on the Mac right now. Like there are, again, like I said, there are known paths, and you know, a lot of your decisions are like, which identity provider we want to work in, how do we want to connect these, how do we want to connect on the Mac. Like there's a lot, but there's like known paths, and they generally work pretty well. Like obviously nothing is foolproof. There's a lot of security things, you know, you're layering on for compliance, like there, you know, but again, like these are, there are not, you're not trying to hack things up today. I'm going to make a complaint that, and I don't, it's not solvable in software. I think it's going to be a hardware fix. Touch ID should be accessible on reboot.
You know, it's really interesting that you mentioned that. And, you know, I do think that I would love to see Apple's biometric story start to match Windows' biometric story. However, I will also point out that Microsoft Hello's, attack vectors that are available today are all about attacking the biometric. And so if you don't have a booted operating system yet, like the Apple platform does not, when you're before you've entered your PIN on an iOS device or before you've entered your local password or the unlock password for the disk at the FileVault login screen, I would actually be totally fine with them continuing to say, hey, look, we've got to have some kind of human known knowledge secret here that we can then essentially say, all right, cool, because you can reset a user's password. You can't reset their biometrics.
True. That's a fair point. That is a fair point. I think my frustration is with Platform SSO.
Sure.
the password that like I use on an SSO. Well, again, it's long, and I think that's probably a good thing to talk about is like password management. That was something like we as an industry were probably like really bad on like 10 years ago. It was kind of like, hey, you use unique passwords for everything, and it's like, well, how do I manage that? Well, I don't like you get a password manager. Like, how are they easy to use? Maybe like, but like now today, like you've got tons of great password managers. Apple has built really robust support for them into its operating systems. Like, you know, again, like 1Password is a good example. Like they are heavily, you know, moving into enterprise tools. You've got the Bitwarden, you got the Dashlane. Like these are really great platforms, and they work well. And they've gone into heavily into the enterprise. And so like when you like again, so like let's say you have like your non-asset platform SSO macOS login window, yep. Like. I will use like a pretty unique password on that, but like something like I can easily remember in my head. Maybe it's like, you know, 7-8 characters, but like it's something I can remember in my head because it's like you have to be sitting in front of that Mac to get into it. So, okay, yeah. It's like the attack vector on that Mac to me is like less because it's like I have to physically be sitting in there.
Well,
okay.
Exactly right. Your possession is always been considered a factor that is hard to defend against. And I think that Apple has done a really good job here in terms of the password back off timer. And so if you think about it, you probably get what, 4 or 5 attempts, but you know, before the system really kind of shakes you off and says, okay, I'm under attack here. I'm going to now it may not be under attack. You might just be trying to remember your login password. But it's going to back you off. And one of the things that I really appreciate about the way in which Apple has designed that system is the back off is exponential. And so, you know, you can, as an admin, basically say, okay. And if there's 10 password attempts on the system, wipe it. And take the data off of it. That is something you get over MDM today. And I think that you can also get to the delay, you know, place where the operating system is going to be like, sorry, dude, you gotta wipe this machine and start over. You're really in a bad state here. But you have to have had possession of the device for multiple days, more than a week, at that point, in order to fully wreck the back off timer.
Right. Well, and again, setting these two, like if these systems are separate, like my local login and like my identity provider, if they're separate, like I'm going to use two different types of passwords. Again, my local computer is going to be a little bit easier to remember. Maybe something that's like in my head, but my identity provider is going to be like, you know, 30 thing, you know, it's going to be unique. It's going to be long and it's going to be in the password manager because we were trained. It's like, hey, you have that local login password. Maybe you have your master password for your password manager. But again, maybe something, again, a little bit easier to remember. But then that one that logs into your identity provider is like impossible to memorize. And you don't have to because you can use Touch ID, you know, to unlock that. And it logs you in. Boom, easy peasy, lemon squeezy. Like that's easy. Like that makes sense to me. So the problem is when –
think about it. You know, one of the things that's really interesting about all of this, and this is Microsoft's approach today. They will be the first to tell you, use secure enclave keys, and we don't care what the device password is at that point. I mean, obviously, you care a little bit. You probably don't want it to be 1234. You probably don't want it to be password. But now I got to change my luggage password, and now I got to change my login password. So sorry, everybody. I'm going to have to do a password fire drill when we're done here. But their concept is like, look, your disk unlock password does not have to be your IDP password. And in fact, they should be different. And, you know, when we think about when we sit down in front of our phones are the most private devices that we have. What do we protect them with? A 6-digit passcode. Maybe 8 if you're lucky. But, you know, I was going to say, we think about it. Those systems have full access in most cases to most corporate secrets because they're the most useful devices that we have. And so if you think about IT organizations as they're thinking about things in the future, a bifurcated password where the user unlock password for a given device is very easy, but then you have to prove it with an IDP login after shortly thereafter. I love that as a possible expansion of usability and a focus on security for the organization because it allows you to say, hey, look, I'll let you get into my local system, but in order for you to access any of the key data that's really important to my enterprise, you're going to need to be able to prove it with a big, long password and a biometric and a multi-factor authentication.
Well, what I'd like to see, because the challenge for me is kind of like when you're into those situations, it's just like, I can't remember that password. So like, I got to pull up, you know, my password manager, my phone and like, look at it and you're over here, type it in. What, in some ways, you know, a couple ways you could fix this too, is kind of like, password manager API at the login window, or like, and it's going to sound dumb, is just like a dang QR code on the login window. Let me pick up my phone and log in, have an identity app on my phone, and I can scan it and it authenticates somehow. Does that make sense? What I'm saying? So like a QR code, but like that way I can leverage my phone to do that. But it's just, it's like, it's hard now to like have that super. So what it makes me want to do is to make my identity password way easier. And that is not good, because that the identity system is has remote attack vector possibilities, and that so that's not a good thing. But we like we're in some ways back in the same thing of like telling everybody you can have really, really long passwords, but like there's not a good way to do that.
And I think that, you know, as we look at the future of all of this, you know, the future of all of this is that story, right? Like where you've, you know, and I think that this is where I think passkeys are super neat, right? Like you have a Bluetooth connection in those, in most browsers. So that, for example, you know, I go to Google and I try to log in for the Mac Admins Foundation, and it's like, hold up, I need your passkey. And my passkey is not on my work computer. It's on my personal phone, right? Like, because I don't cross the streams unless I have to. And so, you know, when I sit down at my machine, I then scan that QR code with my phone. The passkey is resident in the secure enclave of my device. And essentially, it does an exchange over Bluetooth to be like, all right, here's a signed request from that key. That's really Tom. That's really Tom's account, because I'm on Tom's device and I just did a biometric of Tom. And so, you know, those are the kind of things that I think are really neat for the future. The more things that we can get to support passkeys, I think are going to be, you know, the better security that we get without needing to continue to rely on a single knowledge factor that is easily phishable, that is, you know, easily discoverable with a $5 wrench. And, you know, that's a problem. If we can get to a state where, you know, you need a managed device somewhere in the state, in the authentication schema for your organization's key data, then I think that what we have is a much more resilient and secure future for access. I mean, here we are in the week where, you know, hackers are claiming that they have gotten access to the social security numbers for everybody. And, you know, we know at this point in 2024 that social security numbers are a really terrible way to identify an individual, but it's the best way we have. You know, for the purposes of billing, for the purposes of contracts, there are other things that we can and should be doing. And getting to that state where we can be more reliant on passkeys to prove who we are, who we say we are. Well, I think that that gets us into a better state for identity, generally speaking.